Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. It is a lovely morning today in Tucson, 9:06 a.m. in the morning, 10:30 a.m. on your dial. Super excited to be here with you this morning. We just finished up a great week in Tucson. Since we last met last week, we had both the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas, unfortunately ending a bit early for some of our Wildcat fans, leaving a lot of Tucson's elite figuring out ways to spend their Saturday night in Las Vegas. And if your Facebook feed was anything like mine, you saw a lot of people having a few adult beverages and a little fun out there, maybe not quite as much as we would have had the Wildcats won. After that, we had St. Patrick's Day. We talked about that, had a whole show last week about all things being green, including the legalized cannabis industry last week. And St. Patrick's Day has given me a lot of time to reflect, right? If you happen to remember, 4 years ago, almost to the day, was the absolute worst day of my life in the restaurant business. It happened to be the day that every restaurant in the city of Tucson was mandated to shut down at 8 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day, an awful busy day. And over the years, I've had an enormous amount of personal experiences serving you, the general public, our listeners. It's been my privilege for 34 years to go for all kinds of life experiences. I've had customers die. I've helped with births. Like, we've had fights. We've had wedding proposals. There are children that exist just because we were in the restaurant industry in some capacity. And when I tell you the worst day of my life was seriously March 17th, 2020, it's because we had to lay off over 190 staff members overnight, right? It's like, imagine the look on your face when you've got to turn to hundreds of people who depend on you to do things right and to help them make their rent and to make their mortgage and pay their bills and tell them, you know what? I might not be able to do it this week. There is nothing more humbling or more difficult than that conversation that I had to have on that very day. And I did happen to see a number of business owners on social media posting memorials about that. You've got Danny Sawaya, right, from Tucson Strength, my friend Taylor Carter from the Fire Truck Brewing Company, and many others kind of posting about maybe in the future we're not going to shut down in the same way that we did before on something like this. But that doesn't mean that we don't have to, in some cases, shut down businesses, or in some cases, even ingloriously get kicked out of businesses. Arizona's landlord's lien on restaurants happens to be one of the most difficult things for a business owner to go through. If you do not pay your rent within 5 days, you can be locked out of that business. Perhaps you've seen, my listeners, here a chance where you showed up to a local restaurant and suddenly there was a padlock on the door and there were signs up saying, hey, this place is locked down for Arizona landlord lien. And within 5 days, they can confiscate all of your equipment to pay those back bills that you have. And in fact, in just the last year, we've lost a lot of really great restaurants, right? Brushfire Barbecue closed both locations. The Delta lamentably closed downtown. We talked about El Barraco closing on First. We lost the Donut Bar. There's been the Dutch. Like, there's been a number of places in Tucson over just this last season to have shut down. And our season is kind of coming to an end. Just in the same way that the Arizona Wildcat season comes to an end at the beginning of April, restaurant season comes to an end right about the second week of May, right after Mother's Day and the University of Arizona graduation. It's essentially what I like to call Black Monday. You may know Black Monday from the NFL. It's the day that all the coaches get fired, right? After an improper performance or less than satisfactory performance in their season, and 6 to 8 coaches end up giving up the ghost. And this happens right after U of A graduation as well, too. A lot of local businesses stare down that 5 blazing hot months of summer and think to themselves, boy, if this wasn't good for me in October through May, it is absolutely not going to be any better for me in June, July, August, or September. And it happens to be a time that we lose an awful lot of local businesses. And so I want you guys to go out there and support all the local restaurants and businesses that you can during this time. This is the last 6 or 7 weeks you've got to really help these guys and girls fill their coffers and keep things going for the summertime, because we've got to squirrel away our nuts. It's a really, really tough time. And as you've seen businesses get locked out, you wonder to yourself, like, well, I would never do that if I owned a business, right? I would never not tell my employees we were going to close. But the real world doesn't work that way. Restaurants are a unique business that, quite frankly, cannot just let people know months ahead of time that you're not going to be in business anymore. It's not an evil or a terrible business owner thing, but quite frankly, just a concept that if you let your staff know you were closing 3 months in advance, you're not going to have staff anymore pretty soon. You might lose 30 or 40% of your crew well before you ever get to that closure date. In fact, very few places get to Babe Ruth moonshot call their closure and say, you know what, on May 30th, this will be my last day. One of the last ones I saw to successfully do it was a great friend and predecessor of mine, Albert Hall from Acacia, who, when they moved out of St. Philip's Plaza up to Gallery Row, actually had the opportunity to call at the very end of May, this end of season, Black Monday, basically, that we are going to close. And his staff, bless their hearts, stuck around with him and worked all the way to the end, and they filled out the life of their lease. But most of the time, this just doesn't happen. And you end up with a near overnight shocking or stunning closure. Businesses have, as I said before, under ARS 33361, which I'm sure all of you have been reading, you know, at home, that when a tenant neglects or refuses to pay rent when due and in arrears for 5 days, or when a tenant violates any provision of the lease, the landlord may re-enter and take possession. 5 days. That's pretty crazy. And so when we come back after the break, I'm going to bring a guest who's not just a business owner, but happens to be a constable as well, too, and deals with a lot of the eviction issues that we have and have coming up in both the city of Tucson and unincorporated Pima County. We're going to talk a little bit about the differences between a business and a home eviction in some capacity, the roles of a constable, the good, bad, and ugly of what breaks down being a constable. I'm going to learn a lot in this one, and you guys are going to learn a lot too. When we come back, we're going to have Anton Chisholm, candidate for JP10, constable in Pima County. You are listening to 1030 AM The Voice. Jump in Tucson with your host, Grant Kruger, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. Jump in Tucson. You are live with Grant Kruger here on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. This morning, we've got a very special guest with us. We've got Anton Chisholm, owner of both Innovative Signs and current constable for JP10 here in Pima County. Good morning, Anton.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for coming today to jump in Tucson.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Hey, so lots and lots of questions over here. Like, to start, give me the rundown about how you became constable.
Oh, it's a great story. It's a fun story. I was out with a group of guys. We go have dinner at Churrasco's de Brazil about four times a year. And the presiding constable at the time had said, hey, man, I think you'd really do a good job at this. And this was shortly after, you know, the unfortunate loss and tragic loss of life for Constable Martinez.
So it's been basically almost 2 years now at this point. You were appointed, and I believe, in November of 22 to the position?
That is correct, November 15th.
So why don't you start by telling our listeners like what constable services are? I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about the relationship between constables and sheriff's deputies and how all these things play together. There's an amazing Chevy Blazer out there right now that's you know, got the Pima County constable car out there. Are you a police officer? How does this work?
So that's a lot of questions, so I'm going to see if I can cover them. So let's start with the police officer aspect. So constables are, in fact, law enforcement officers by statute when they're doing the official duties of constable. They go through training. They are required to do training. It is AZ Post, which is Peace Officer Standards and Training, which is the same certification or certifying agency for all sheriffs and police officers throughout the state. So the short answer is, Yes, they are law enforcement. No, they're not police. So their job is not to do traffic enforcement. We do not do criminal investigations. So that's going to be left to the actual police and sheriff's department. Our job very specifically is to enforce the rulings of the court, and everything that we do is signed by a judge. So a judge orders it, we go execute.
And so is there a fair bit of training for this one as well too? Is there like a constable academy, like there is a police academy?
No, there's not. So there is a fair bit of training. So there are 2 annual weeks of training that are provided by the Arizona Constable Association in conjunction with AZ Post. And then after you become a constable and go through that training, then you have so many regulatory hours per year for continued education or continued training. One of our trainings that we do annually is obviously the basic handgun recall. So you have to go through the 8 or 9 day basic handgun course, which is the exact same course and qualifying that every police officer or sheriff's department has to do for the state. And then annually after that, that is the minimum standard, right? So you can do additional training, but you have to do a recall annually in order to be able to maintain your firearm certification.
So this also is an elected position, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
I think a lot of listeners out there probably don't understand. How many justice districts are there right now in Pima County?
So there are 9. We have 9 justice precincts currently with there was a removal or a suspension here recently. So that brought us down to 8 constables that are active.
And that's 8 constables for the entirety of Pima County, over 1 million residents. I understand that JP10 alone, which you're in charge of, has got about 96,000 residents. Is that correct?
That is correct. And a fun fact a lot of people don't know is that Pima County is the 7th largest county in the country by geography.
That's a pretty big county and a lot of territory for one guy to cover. Do you get helpers in that? Are there deputies? How does this work?
So the deputy constable concept is not something that's been afforded to the constables currently of Pima County. There are lots of other large counties, to include Maricopa, that does have deputy constables. Unfortunately, we have not been authorized those yet by our board of supervisors, but that's something that we're still in talks with them about.
So it's basically you, one man, looking over 96,000 people?
For my justice precinct, yes. And then, of course, you have the other constables. There's one specifically that lives in and works out in Ajo. We have another constable that works in Green Valley, Sarita. And then the 7 of us, or 6 because of the removal, maintain the Tucson metro area.
Wow, that's quite a bit of responsibility there, Anton. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Anton Chisholm, current candidate for JP10 Constable in Pima County here on 1030 AM The Voice. Anton and I had the pleasure of getting to spend some time together a couple of weeks ago at the Conquistadors event. Those who may remember our show from a few weeks back, we were talking about the Colo Guard Classic, and Anton and I, as both on the bottom rungs of the Conquistadors thus far as rookies and in our second and third year, we're tasked with scrimming and building a number of public restrooms together. And here I got to spend a lot of time with this amazing individual. And Anton is a very large man. I realize we're on radio here right now, but it's a big dude, right? And we got to spend a lot of time working out in the sunshine and putting together porta-johns. And you know, you can learn a lot from a man building toilets together, I think. And I thought, this is an amazing dude. He's a business owner, but also a constable. And how do you find time to manage both innovative signs and this entire constable district like this? I find that this would be incredibly difficult.
So I'm not going to lie. I mean, it is very, you know, labor intensive, but I'm the guy that figures I can rest when I'm dead. So, you know, I jokingly say I have 3 full-time jobs. The constable job, I spend my early mornings at the sign company so it doesn't interfere with my county work. And then when I get done with my county work in the afternoon, I'm a rancher. So, you know, I've got 100 animals out of my ranch that, you know, that I maintain along with my much better half, who is very accommodating of my lack of time at home.
I could only imagine. I think as a restaurateur, I worry about that, not spending enough time at home or around the family. I could only imagine both owning my own business and being the constable and having my own ranch to take care of. Like, my goodness. And then to find time to work with the Conquistadors and build toilets with me. Amazing.
Right, right. Well, hey, man, you know, the community, that's my biggest thing, right? I want to give back. I don't want to leave anything on the table. I want to just kind of put it all out there and give my best effort. That's my thing.
What other sort of community work have you done to get your name out there?
So Currently, I'm not coaching, but I've coached youth sports for several years. My most recent place that I coached was at Tortolita Middle School for several years. I had the fortunate pleasure of working under Rex Scott. He was the principal there at the time. But as far as other community involvement, my ranch, we donate anywhere from 6 to 12 horses a year. We take them down to the rodeo parade, which is the largest non-motorized parade in the country. And we qualify them as parade marshals. So then after that qualification happens, then we're the people that are riding horses amongst the other 70 or so other people to help keep the streets safe and make sure that the entries, the wagons, the horses, et cetera, are, you know, safely maintained. And obviously in the event of an emergency, we're the first point of contact for that. That's something I'm really proud of. And Jennifer, my better half, she has been doing that for over 20 years. I'm you know, involved to some degree. The Marana Food Bank had their ribbon cutting, so I give back to the community, the Marana, the Unified School District, my sign company, anywhere that my kids are attending school. I go to the principal and let them know that if there's something that my sign company can support for the school, then, you know, sign me up. That's something that I'd like to be a part of. And you know, we can work out the logistics, but generally speaking, it's usually a gratis donation to try to provide that. So, you know, I want to be involved. I really do try to give back to the community that I live in, which happens to be Marana. So, you know, I support Marana heavily. I am an Amphi grad. I didn't forget where I came from, but my kids and where I currently pay my taxes is Marana.
And so Innovative Signs is located in Marana as well, too?
That is correct. It's a brick and mortar that's on the corner of Ina and Old Father. I guess it's not really a corner. It's an intersection. We're on the south side of the intersection behind the Nico's Taco there.
Very cool. Nico's is a good landmark over there to let you know where anything is late at night. So tell me a bit about Innovative Signs. What kind of work do you guys do there?
We do everything. So our tagline is, you know, from imagination to creation. So we have graphic designers. I have 3 full-time graphic designers on staff. We've got, you know, a guy that does our vehicle wraps. We do a ton of vehicle wraps. Electrical signs, service and maintenance, you know, then of course your traditional banners and stickers, and you know, we do business cards and, you know, small format printing, things like that. And we work with the community. We have an apparel affiliation that we work with a local apparel distributor, so that way people can kind of have like a one-stop shop if they want to, instead of having multiple vendors for this or that. You know, we tell them, hey, come here, and if we don't do it, we'll still figure it out for you.
So it sounds like we should see some really innovative Chisholm for constable signs as well, too, out there in the future when those are allowed, huh?
That is true. That's the hope, right? We want to make the primary ballot. So, you know, we're still in the signature gathering process for constable. But yes, my goal is to be one of those guys that has signs all over the place, you know.
So when are those signatures due, Anton? Even if you're the incumbent, you've got to get yourself back on that ballot.
That is correct. And I want to be very clear, if I can, for just a minute. I was appointed by the Board of Supervisors unanimously over one of my opponents. I was not elected by the taxpayers of my justice precinct. So I don't want to mislead anybody to that. But the Board of Supervisors felt confident enough to appoint me to do the job. And the relationships that I've built over the last 14 months have been very successful with the endorsements and the buy-in from the community. But very specifically, I'm proud of being able to be the constable, right? So the job, I'm digressing from your question just a little bit, but the job itself is a very unique type of job. We're doing life-changing events to people. People's circumstances have brought the courts to get involved and then us to go execute. And we're not police. So that hard charging police tactic of going out there and you know, kicking in doors and dragging people out, that's not a thing, right? What we do, or what I do specifically, is a little more humanitarian approach with some empathy to say, hey, this has to happen because the judge said so, but we can still work through this. And so I tap into some of those community resources that are available to these people, or reach out to social workers, or, you know, try to help make arrangements for people to be able to, you know, get transitional housing, or, you know, whatever the case is. If it's an order of protection that's removing them from their home, instead of saying, hey, get your stuff and get out, I'm the guy that mediates so that they can grab some of the necessary things that they're going to need to be able to, you know, do that transition fairly smoothly.
No, that's a really important job over there, Anton, and I can't thank you enough for both your service as both a military veteran, right, for the U.S. Army, and for serving as constable over these last couple of years. When we return after the break, we're going to ask Anton some more hard-hitting questions about, you know, what it's like to be a constable, some of the difficult situations perhaps that he's been put in, and how his life experience has helped prepare him for this particular position. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. We are live with Anton Chisholm, candidate for JP10 Constable. He's both the owner of Innovative Signs. He's got a ranch. He's the constable and the second coolest radio voice in all of Tucson. Join us after the break on 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona, to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we have had the fortune of having Anton Chisholm join us live this morning. He is not just a rancher, not just an entrepreneur with Innovative Signs, but is currently the active constable for JP10 and is running again. And so we're talking about the signatures and what you needed to do and get those completed as well, too. To finish me up on that one, how many signatures do you need, sir?
So, for the election, we need 686 qualified signatures, and qualified signatures are going to be very specific to the justice precinct. You have to live and be an active registered voter, and because this job is not a partisan job, but it is an elected position, which is it's a partisan election, those 686 are directly reflected from the Republican Party. So you have to be a Republican, a PND, or an independent to sign my petition to help support me and get me back on the ballot.
Give me the approximate boundaries of JP10 over here. I realize that we can't do meets and bounds over the radio, but the approximate geographic area of those that could help you out.
So Catalina, northern Oro Valley, and, you know, of course, Rancho Vistoso, anything north and northern than that. All of the Marana communities, Gladden Farm, San Lucas, Rancho Vistoso, or excuse me, Dove Mountain, Continental Ranch, Avra Valley, Picture Rocks, those are going to be the main communities. Everything kind of northwest of those areas is going to be that justice precinct.
Great. And so that's over, as we discussed before, over 96,000 residents in total. And we've got to get 600 and some change by early April to get you on the ballot for what would be a July 30th primary, right? I believe the ballots get mailed out on July 3rd. So we've got pretty much an entire election month going on over here in Pima County as well, too. Again, Anton, you are currently the constable right now. Give me a couple stories about some of the more difficult situations that you maybe have had to go through in this job, right? Serving writs of eviction can't exactly be an easy process. Even as big of a guy as you are, I bet you there's somebody out there that's ready to give you a little bit of lip service when you come knocking on their door.
Well, that is definitely a thing. A couple of things. I'll tell you about one that's kind of maybe a little more serious without giving you any very specifics, but going out to do an eviction, usually, traditionally, we'll do some research ahead of time to know what family or family people may or may not be in this particular unit, house, apartment, trailer, whatever it is. And depending on what I see, I'll either call out, you know, the sheriff's department or whatever local municipality law enforcement to assist me. But most often I do them by myself. And there have been a few times where I show up and it's usually the guys that are smaller than me that want to give me that lip service, you know. And
well,
so
why are you looking at me for being smaller than you over here?
No. Not I was looking at you because I'm here with you. But yeah, I mean, your size, yeah, you know, maybe. But it's usually the littler guys that want to be tough guys. And so, you know, I've had guys, you know, tell me, you're not going to make me leave. I'm not going to go anywhere. Fortunately for me, I've never actually been physically threatened with a weapon. So that's great, right? I want to go home every night. But usually I just talk to him. I'm like, look, again, I'm here to help. I really am. I mean, the judge, you knew this was coming. The judge sent us out here, but I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you transition as smoothly as you possibly can. I'm here to help you do this on your own, or I'm here to help you with whatever means we need to remove and restore the property back to the landowner, right? So, when we say difficult, I think maybe my size and presence, and then again, maybe the way that I speak to people has helped mitigate those real tough times. But I'll tell you a funny story about another lippy guy. So I was helping another constable do an eviction, and there was a guy again, yeah, he's about your size. And man, he had a mouth on him, and he had a mouth like he...
As we do when we're my size here.
You know, this guy had a mouth like I remember growing up going to Amphi, kind of had a mouth. I mean, this guy was just going off. And by the time I helped him get out of the out of his unit, he continued to go, well, this was an upstairs unit, and he's yelling at me from the parking lot, and I am a big guy. I'm almost 6'5 and 330 pounds, so I'm a pretty big dude. And he looks up at me, and he says, whatever, you big Samoan housewife. And I started laughing. All of the police that were there started laughing. The other constable started laughing. I said, that guy's probably been waiting to use that line his entire life. And this was the most perfect setting for him. So I loved that. That was pretty fun.
I'm sorry you didn't get that one on film. Speaking of film, do you guys have to wear body cameras as constables?
So the answer is no. So let me be clear about one thing. As a constable, as an elected person, there is no you have to do. Okay, so with that being said, the former presiding constable, Constable William Lake, who is currently the constable for Justice Precinct 8 on the east side of town, he had set up a program where he orchestrated the purchase of body cameras and tasers for the entire constabulary. And when he did that, the purpose of that was to make us more safe. Of course, this was in the wake of, you know, the unfortunate loss of life that we had. So, it took us until January of last year is when we put together the equipment. And then I think it was around the February, March timeframe that we went ahead and I orchestrated myself with the sheriff's department and the help of Heather Lappin, who's also running for sheriff, to get with their team to get us certified, because we can't carry any equipment that we're not certified or trained with. So we went to the sheriff's department. Their master trainer went over the body cam and tasers with us. So to kind of answer your question is no, we don't have to, but there are several of us that do wear our body cameras. And ironically, the story I just told you was in fact caught on my body camera. So that makes it fun to kind of go back and look at every now and then. But yes, I do personally wear body armor. I do personally wear a body camera. I do carry a taser. I do carry a firearm. I do carry handcuffs. I do carry, you know, safety equipment like, you know, gloves, tourniquet, chest seals, things like that, so I can render first aid, you know, if there's a need for something like that, whether it's myself assisting an agency, which we also do as constables. We'll go out and we'll assist law enforcement if they ask us to. So I feel like I'm pretty prepared for that.
No, this is definitely a very serious job. You had referenced the unfortunate incident that happened in August of 22 when Constable Deborah Martinez Garibay was killed in the line of duty. Mm-hmm. Like, how has that changed the performance of the constables? Like, what changes has these offices put into place to prevent that from happening again in the future?
So I don't want to speak. I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to speak out of place. But what I will say is, the prevention of that particular incident and most of the other losses of life to constables specifically in the state of Arizona since before it was a statehood back in the territory days have all been the vast majority have been an ambushed murder. So I don't know what could have prevented that other than her not showing up that day. But since then, constables have been afforded or allowed to, one, seek as much training as they'd like. And I'm a big proponent of training and ongoing learning. I figure when you stop learning, you really are probably not breathing anymore, but that's my personal opinion. But we do wear body armor now. Not all constables did before, and still not all constables do, but it's highly recommended for that reason. Not all constables carry a firearm, which they are all authorized to, provided that they have passed that 8.5 or 9 day basic firearms course. And again, the less lethal, which would be the taser, that's also another provision that was added after, you know, the unfortunate loss of life. So, I mean, there have been some things that have been made available to constables that maybe weren't really made available prior to. I don't know if it was an oversight. I wasn't a constable at the time, but once I became a constable, those were pretty important to me. Like I said earlier, I want to go home and see my family every day.
No, without a doubt. This is obviously a very serious job, and you're hitting people at a very stressful time in their lives as well, too. The displacement of a home, just like I talked about, a displacement of a business is upsetting. Imagine the displacement from your home even magnifies that level of stress. So what else do you do to help diffuse those situations?
So again, I kind of talked about it a little bit. So we have a program here in Pima County, and it's referenced by EELS, and that's the Emergency Eviction Legal Services. And there are several social workers. We have a couple of hotels that the county kind of maintains that allows us to transition folks that maybe are, you know, maybe they lost their job and they're in the middle of, you know, their new job and their monies haven't come available or, you know, something like that. So the landowner was granted the residence back by the judge. So we'll remove them from the property. We'll get them a ride, you know, a taxi cab, like, so to try to reduce the financial impact or hardship that they could already be going through, and then transition them to one of these homes or these hotels. And some of these hotels were up to like 90 days, you know, to give them some time to kind of reestablish their footing and get back on their feet. So, I mean, there are definitely resources that are available for these people. Yeah.
Yeah, quite a bit of responsibility over there for sure. This is Anton Chisholm, current incumbent and candidate for JP10 Constable. You are listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson. Tomorrow we've got a great show with Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Friday we've got Dr. Ed Ackerley coming up on Jump in Tucson, talking all things success in Tucson, local business, politics. Again, 10:30 a.m., The Voice is going to be your home for local news and talk. We're the only station broadcast live here in the 520. So remember that when you advertise. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up one more segment with Anton Chisholm, candidate for JP10 Constable in Tucson, Arizona. This is Grant Kruger, 10:30 a.m., The Voice. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You are live with Grant Kruger and Anton Chisholm, candidate and current incumbent for Constable in JP10. And we've been having a fascinating discussion this morning about the role of Constable and you know, some really difficult situations that you've had to go through with evictions. At the beginning of the show, I talked about how restaurants get evicted, and it's pretty ugly, right? It's 5 days, and there's a padlock and an Arizona landlord's lien, and it's game over for your life savings and a possibly personally guaranteed lease, and that's it. How does this work on the residential side? Like, how much warning do people generally have to know that something like this is coming?
So with residential specifically, if there's a breach of contract, then some property managers or landowners can do an immediate eviction, which can take about 5 days. But traditionally, an eviction, they're going to be given a 5-day notice to cure, a 30-day notice. And then there's going to be a hearing that comes, or, you know, comes after that. Whether or not the defendant shows up to the hearing or not is up to them. But if they don't, then usually there's a judgment granted by default with the judge that hears the case. And then once the judgment has been signed, the plaintiff then can go back and apply for the writ of restitution, which is when we go out and once that judge signs that, which is to restore the property, it's effective immediately. We don't have to give any more notice. The restaurants and the businesses, that's a little different. I don't really want to speak a whole bunch on that, but what I will say is that the constable's office specifically, we work for the Pima County Consolidated Justice Court for Tucson Metro, and the value of our cases is typically going to be $10,000 and less. If it's over $10,000, it goes to the Superior Court, which is probably where your business is and, you know, your larger homes or foreclosures and that kind of thing are going to happen, and then that's going to usually be enforced by the Sheriff's Department. They do have their own civil division. Most constables, most of what we do is going to be civil process type stuff. There are some criminal actions that we do that, you know, warrants or criminal summonses or criminal subpoenas. But the vast majority of the work that we do as a constable is a civil process. And I say that to say this, that's one of the reasons why being a police officer is not a requirement. You don't need to be a cop or have prior law enforcement experience. The training is great because of, you know, obviously your situational awareness. So hopefully you've got some training in that, and that's some of the stuff that you do get from the Arizona Constable Association training that's annual.
Sure. That's an awful lot of responsibility there for sure, like levied upon you guys on this one. And a couple months notice is still like not a lot of time to pack all your life together and start to think about alternative housing solutions for sure. I mean, that's a really, really difficult process.
Yeah, I agree.
So coming up on the last couple minutes here of our segment, you're running for election. You are a registered Republican. This is a partisan race, correct?
That is absolutely correct, yes.
And so you're running in the Republican primary, which is going to be on July 3rd. You've got signatures coming up that you need to reach a statutory minimum by early April. How can people help you out again and get those signatures into you?
So let me clarify. The signatures have to be turned in by 5 p.m. on April 1st. So I am attempting to have my signatures ready to go by the last day of March so that I can go through and check all the boxes, make sure everything is filled out properly. I have an opportunity to get those signatures vetted. But again, we need 686, myself and both of my opponents. I need signatures. I need help. I would love the public, the community to assist me. I'd like to do this job for 4 years under my own name as an elected person, not filling the vacancy of somebody who vacated their seat. And that's what I did as the appointed incumbent now. But voteforchisholm.com. That's VOTEFORCHISM.com is my website. You can go read about me, but as soon as you click on that website, it'll pop up sign petition here. You can sign it electronically with your driver's license or your voter registration ID. You can email me at voteforchisholm@gmail.com, spelled the same way, VOTEFORCHISM@gmail.com. And if you email me your address and your name, I will personally come to your home with a petition so you can sign it. I'm dedicated to this. I'm dedicated to the community. I want to show the FaceTime to say, hey, I believe in what I'm doing, and I want you to have confidence in the person that's serving you as a taxpayer.
Wow, that is dedication there, Anton. Maybe something that we don't always want, Anton, showing up to your home from some of the stories you've told us here. But a real bit of dedication to go out there and drive and get those signatures and to participate in the municipal process, right, of politics and local elections. These are the things that are so important to our community. And everybody gets really excited about the presidential race or the Senate race, but it's local politics that really make a difference in our daily lives. And I have to say, I really appreciate your participation both in that process, being appointed and running as well too, because it just certainly can't be an easy feat to be a father, a business owner, a rancher, an incumbent constable. Like, that's a lot of hats to wear there, sir. Well,
and right now is election time, right? So I'm out after I do my day as a constable, walking door to door, getting signatures, going to events on weekends. So, you know, taking time away from my family, and I have the full support of my family. Like, I want to say that my family, God bless them, I love them, they love me, they support this, they believe in me, they believe in what I do, they believe in, you know, to see that, you know, I'm a servant leader. As a father, I'm a servant leader. I'm out there with my kids, I'm out there with my family. Again, anything and anywhere I can be helpful, I try to be helpful. I don't just take the weekends off and sit on my duff and do nothing. I mean, I'm out there slinging hay or fixing fence, welding. I'm the plumber, I'm the carpenter, I'm the electrician. I mean, I'm the everything. So it's important to give my family the credit. I mean, and I would be remiss to not give my Lord and Savior the credit that he deserves for every, you know, breath that he gives me to be able to serve the community. So that's something that's very important to me is my faith. So if you find it, please, you know, support me. If you find it, you know, appropriate, if you think what you heard is good, if you'd like to have a sit-down conversation with me, I'll try to carve out some time for you. Again, I've only got about 12 days left to try to get these signatures. But after that, I mean, I'll still be doing the job regardless until the end of the year. I would still love to, you know, meet some of you folks, come out. There's some different leadership groups that are around that I go speak at. So, I mean, you can catch me at those as well. Again, my name is Anton Chisholm. VoteForChisholm.com is my website, and my email address at gmail.com. Feel free to reach out to me. I will contact you. That is a promise that I will make to you.
Wow, incredibly impressive man, Anton. I knew it from the moment we were scrimming toilet fencing together that we were bound to have this conversation over here. I appreciate your dedication to public service, your service in both our armed forces, what you're doing right now, and being a small business owner, a father, a rancher, and you know, having, maybe I take this back, the greatest radio voice here in morning radio at 10:30 a.m.
I just wanted to add one thing. Thank you for you. Thank you for being a Tucson conquistador. Thank you for giving your time back to Pima County's youth. I mean, that's what our mission is. It's about the kids. And you know, you are all obviously also a servant leader. So I appreciate you and thank you for what you're doing for our community as well.
Thanks. I appreciate everybody like participating in local politics. I appreciate everybody going out and helping out local businesses, whether it's innovative signs, whether it's restaurants that have just opened up in Tucson this year, in spite of the ones that have been locked out. I can think of Taboo opening up on Congress, Copal opening up recently on Broadway. There's a new place on University called Bourbon Bent. There's that amazing pickleball place called Corbett's. Lots of cool new things out there for you to see and experience as well, too. It's been a really fascinating hour talking with Anton Chisholm, candidate for JP10 Constable in Pima County. I am your host, Grant Kruger, on Jump in Tucson. Join us tomorrow for Tom Moulton's Southern Arizona Attraction Alliances. Until then, have a great day. Jump in and stay local, Tucson. This is Grant Kruger, 10:30 a.m., The Voice, your home for local news and talk.